Members, I call the meeting of the Property Tax and Local Government Finance Committee to order. We'll begin with the disposition of the minutes from the March 6th meeting. Representative Rarick moves the adoption of the March 6th minutes. Any additions or corrections as presented? Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the minutes from March 6th, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. Those minutes are adopted. Our first bill on the agenda today, an aggressive agenda, members, is House File 1389 from Chair Davids. Representative New moves that House File 1389 be entertained by the committee and laid open for possible inclusion. Representative Davids, Chair
Thank
Davids,
you, Mr.
welcome.
Chair, and if someone could move the 0157 amendment, that has some continuing education to clarify some language there.
And I think Representative New moves that amendment for you, Chair Davids. Discussion, members, Chair Davids, do you want to talk quickly about the amendment?
Basically, Mr. Chairman, members, we're just cleaning up some of the continuing education language here.
Okay. Discussion on the is it A17-0157 amendment, right?
Correct.
Discussion on that as presented and as moved for adoption by Representative New. Seeing none, all in favor of adoption of the A17-0157 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. That amendment is adopted. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House File 1389 is amended that we have before. It says bill helps to address Minnesota's workforce housing shortage in both greater Minnesota and the metro by enabling qualified owners of manufactured home parks, which are the state's largest source of non-subsidized affordable housing, to secure property tax class rate of 1% for the underlying leased land at the same class rate paid by a manufactured homeowner of 1%. So we just even that out, Mr. Chairman, members. I have with me a witness, Mr. Mark Bruner, who would like to make some further comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bruner, welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Mark Bruner. I'm with the Manufactured Modular Home Association of Minnesota, and thank you for hearing the bill, and thank you, Chair Davids, for bringing it forward. As was described, manufactured home parks are the state's largest source of non-subsidized affordable housing. The homes in the manufactured home parks or manufactured home communities are taxed at a class rate of 1%, essentially the homestead rate. The underlying land in the manufactured home park is taxed at a rate of 1.25%. What the bill does is brings the land that the homeowners lease to the same rate as the home actually pays in terms of a class rate of 1%. Something unique with the bill is that it doesn't just by default apply to all manufactured home parks. They don't get the class rate of 1. There are some additional requirements in terms of taking some courses that are certified for continuing education that deal with issues such as landlord-tenant law, Minnesota Chapter 327, 504B, that also deal with any real estate issues, real estate continuing ed that's approved by the Department of Commerce, courses that are approved by the Department of Labor and Industry that relate to manufactured home installation, those kinds of things. And the reason for that is, as we see the shortage of affordable housing, particularly in greater Minnesota, the need for expansion of existing manufactured home communities, parks, as well as upgrading infrastructure, some of those kinds of things. What the bill does is essentially allows these property owners to do that without having to increase rents additionally. In other words, this would, you know, be an offset to help encourage updating aging infrastructure, perhaps expansion of the number of home sites as a way to expand the state's supply of non-subsidized affordable housing.
Thank you, Mr. Bruner. Anyone else who would like to testify for or against the bill? Mr. May, welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name's Tom May. I'm the retired Hennepin County Assessor, and I represent the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. Each year we look at these bills, and I just saw this amendment this morning. Assessors in the state of Minnesota do a lot of different things in the property tax system, as you can imagine. I think this is our first kind of foray into verifying education for different members of taxpayers. I would much prefer a state agency certify to the assessor that they've met the requirements of a bill than for the assessor actually to have to determine whether they have met the educational requirements. So that would be my only comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. May. Members, questions for either testifier or the author? Any other testifiers?
No.
I think we've exhausted the testifiers. Members, questions? Hearing none. Representative New renews her motion that House File 1389 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Representative Knobloch. Next. House File 610, Representative Erickson moves that House File 610 be entertained by the committee and then laid over for possible inclusion. Welcome, Chair Knobloch. Your bill, House File 610, is before us.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope that House File 610 isn't too entertaining. But I'm glad the committee is entertaining the bill. Chair and members, House File 610 helps solve a tax problem for families, farm families, that want to avoid probate and use a common estate tax planning technique. One common technique is to separate your assets, in this case farmland, into two different revocable trusts of roughly equal value in order to take advantage of the estate tax exemptions that exist in law for each person. However, in 2012, the Minnesota Department of Revenue declared that different trusts, revocable trusts, could not be linked for homestead tax purposes. Thus, a married farm couple who wants to set up two different trusts with their home and land split between them can no longer do that and still have agricultural homestead status. Different counties around the state have interpreted this revenue ruling differently. And so now, depending on which county you're in, some of them will still allow you to claim ag homestead tax status, and some will not. This bill ensures that married farm couples are not forced to choose between losing the benefit of common estate tax planning techniques and the property tax benefits that come from having ag homestead tax status. This somewhat complex bill is supported by the Minnesota State Bar Association. They've been involved in its drafting. We have a revenue note that says it has a negligible fiscal effect. I have Mike Sampson, an attorney here, that can answer further questions if people have them, and I'd appreciate your support.
Thank you, Chair Knobloch. Mr. Sampson, do you have few words? Please introduce yourself.
Members, Michael Sampson. I'm an attorney in Minneapolis and a member of the Probate and Trust Law Section of the Minnesota State Bar Association. And our legislative committee, we hear from members outstate who practice in this area that it's particularly frustrating to them if their practice straddles multiple counties to have one married couple client be able to set up revocable trusts to avoid probate and do other estate planning, achieve other estate planning benefits, and thereby lose their ag homestead status, but a couple in another adjacent county with the same planning techniques gets to keep its estate planning, its ag homestead status. So this unequal treatment of different people in different counties, given the sort of lack of clarity in the bill, is a real problem. And the proposed language simply clarifies that husband and wife are treated as a unit, and the land that they own together, whether it's between themselves directly or in trusts, even if one of them has died and left a trust for the surviving spouse's benefit, shouldn't make a difference to their ability to get ag homestead treatment and also take advantage of the estate tax exemption.
Thank you, Mr. Sampson. Anyone else would like to testify on this bill? Mr. May. Welcome, Mr. May.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Tom May from the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. I'm sure everybody's seen the chart that we have on Ag Homestead from the Department of Revenue that instructs assessors on how to administer Ag Homestead. So our only concern is the complexity of Ag Homestead and what's happening, and new bills coming in like trusts, beginning farmer, somebody who's farmed for 10 years at any time in the past, and all these complexities that are added to this chart. So that would be our concern.
Thank you, Mr. May. Anyone else would like to testify? Questions, members? For the author, any testifiers? Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. This is a good bill. It helps farm couples try to plan their estate and to still take advantage of the homestead credit, so I support the bill.
Thank you. Other questions? Okay. With that, Representative Knobloch, anything else for the good of the cause?
No, thanks. I'd appreciate your support.
Thank you, Chair Knobloch. With that, Representative Erickson renews her motion that House File 610 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Representative Lehman, are you here? Representative Lehman? House File 1019. Representative Lunan moves that House File 1019 be entertained by the committee and then laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Lunan moves the adoption. Representative Lehman, we've got an A1 amendment. Would you like that applied to the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. I would like to move the A1 amendment.
Okay. Representative Lunan moves the adoption of the A1 amendment. Discussion on the A1 amendment. It's coming around. Okay. Does everyone have the A1 amendment in front of them? Discussion on the A1 amendment. Hearing none, all in favor of adoption of the A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. A1 amendment is adopted. The bill, as amended, is before us. Representative Lehman, welcome.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. I'm really pleased to be here this morning to represent economic development in Greater Minnesota. I've spent much of my career in economic development, and I'm really pleased to be able to present this bill that I think will assist businesses that are looking to expand in Greater Minnesota. And with me is Dan Dorman of the Greater Minnesota Partnership here today, who will also be testifying. But, Mr. Chair, the House File 1019 is tweaking and improving a law that is already in law, has been in place for a couple of years, and that provides some exemption from sales tax for businesses that are expanding. What this bill does is it creates a new incentive that makes changes to the Minnesota Business Expansion Program so that it can be more effective. The new incentive will create an exemption from the statewide business property tax on an expansion in Greater Minnesota for a period of 7 years. We think that this will result in additional capital investment, increased tax base, and most importantly, new good-paying jobs. The bill also changes the compensation level from 120% of the federal property level to 110%, simply because that matches up with the requirements of other similar state programs in Minnesota. So why Greater Minnesota? I've heard that asked in other committees, and I think it's clear that we are continually working in Greater Minnesota because Greater Minnesota continues to lag behind the metropolitan areas. In fact, in Moody's, one of the bond rating agencies lists the following concerns about Minnesota's economy. There's a high tax burden that allows low-cost neighboring states to recruit Minnesota businesses. We're showing that there is actually a net migration out of Minnesota. There's an increasing divergence between the thriving metro area and the rest of the state. And there's modest population growth, where there is population growth in Greater Minnesota. So that makes it difficult. And, in fact, another interesting statistic that I just learned is that the commercial industrial tax burden in Greater Minnesota and the rural parts of Minnesota is the second highest in the nation, whereas in the metro area it's like sixth or seventh in the nation. So testifying for the bill with me today is Dan Dorman, Executive Director of the Greater Minnesota Partnership. And I would like to have him testify, Mr. Chair, if that's all right.
Thank you, Representative Lehman. Mr. Dorman, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Dan Dorman, Executive Director of the Greater Minnesota Partnership. Partnership has about 90 members throughout Greater Minnesota, businesses, chambers of commerce, EDAs, nonprofits, higher ed institutions, kind of a wide variety of organizations from throughout the state, and our sole purpose is to try to stimulate more economic development in Greater Minnesota. And in full disclosure, Mr. Chair, I did happy to serve in the House for 8 years. After that, I did EDA work for the city of Albert Lea. We sit on the Iowa border, and one of the things we struggled with was watching expansions that would maybe come out of the metropolitan area but would just slip across that border into Iowa. And so in speaking with our members, talking to particularly manufacturers, we thought that this would be a good approach to try to create an incentive for the companies that are already in Greater Minnesota to expand their operation in Greater Minnesota, or if there's a metropolitan company that's going to expand outstate somewhere, to get them to expand in outstate Minnesota and not in Iowa or Wisconsin or North or South Dakota. And so what the bill, as Representative Lehman said, was for a period of 7 years, only on the expansion of the expanded property, the business would be exempt from the statewide business property tax. So it wouldn't impact local units of government in a negative fashion, but it would help develop that tax base that we think would pay dividends down the road.
Thank you, Mr. Dorman. Anyone else who would like to testify on House File 1019? Questions, members? Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do recognize the need that in some parts of rural Minnesota, there are communities that are really struggling to get employment opportunities created. But there's also parts of Greater Minnesota that are doing really well. In fact, they're growing faster than most parts of the metropolitan area. And I always like us targeting our efforts a little bit more so that we actually get the aid to where it's needed, because there's in both metro and regional and Greater Minnesota, there's areas of economic stability and growth and areas that are really stagnating and really challenged. But there's a new effort in this bill, and I'm wondering if you could just talk a little bit more about that, and that's under lines 1.10, and that the requirement in the past has been that they have operated in Greater Minnesota for at least a year, and now we're taking away that requirement. So that really creates a real competition and an incentive for stealing each other's businesses, which I don't think is, we have enough regional tensions as it is, that we shouldn't be really necessarily incenting economic development officials from Greater Minnesota trying to take an established business out of another part of Minnesota. And could you tell us why you think that's important?
Well, I can speak to it first and then
Representative Lehman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and
Representative Loeffler,
thank you for the question. I'll just speak from experience as an economic developer. Oftentimes, our business expansion opportunities come from the metro area, frankly. And what we have found is that businesses that would like to expand part of their operations into Greater Minnesota are oftentimes our best opportunities because they've been in Minnesota for a while, they're good partners, and they maybe have a tighter labor force in the metro area, whereas they have access to labor in greater Minnesota. So with this language, it doesn't require that business to have already been located in greater Minnesota. It can be located in the metro and still expand and take and use this opportunity.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Lehman, I have no problem with a company that is expanding and needs to create another manufacturing place. Well, we might prefer that they do it one place. There may be business reasons to do it in two, to be closest to their market or something else. I do have a concern about us using tax policy to encourage cities to just try and steal each other's employers. So I would hope that as the bill goes forward that we would think about maybe adding some language on that says to expand into another community in addition to its home community or something like that, so that we really aren't creating a tax incentive for someone in greater Minnesota to send invites to its surrounding communities to try and to disrupt the economy in another city.
Mr. Dorman.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Chair, the only other thing I'd add, because I think that I understand that, and I would encourage Representative Lehman and others to look at that language as you speak of it. It might already be in another part of state law that you can't, that to make it harder to rob from one city to another, but I think it raises a good point. But I did hear a lot of similar arguments about the JobZ program, and yet, to my knowledge, I don't think it ever happened. It never happened where you saw one company pick up its operation in one city in Minnesota and move it to another. The cost of that would be probably outpace the incentive created here. So I'm not sure how often it would happen, but I think you raise a good point.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions, members? Hearing none, Representative Lehman, any final comments on the bill?
Mr. Chair, thank you so much for this opportunity for Mr. Dorman and I to explain the bill. I think it's a good bill. I think it's just a tweaking existing law that will further enhance the opportunities in greater Minnesota, and I thank you for your time today.
Thank you. With that, Representative Lunan renews his motion that House File 1019 be laid over for possible inclusion. The House File is laid over. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Swazinski, House File 1537 is going to be next. Representative Markwart moves that House File 1537 be entertained by the committee and laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Swazinski, there's an amendment here. Would you like that adopted?
Yes, just to get her in the shape that we'd like.
Okay, and Representative Markwart moves the amendment, the A17-0165 amendment, to be adopted and added to the bill. Discussion on the amendment. Representative Swazinski, do you want to describe the amendment?
Just sure. The amendment pretty much is, it talks just a little bit, we had some stakeholders that are involved, and they just wanted a couple days out to push, move it within from 10 days to 15 days after November 15th, as far as the dissemination of some of those dollars after they've done their analysis of what's owed and this distribution, and that's just, we're just going towards a date that they felt more comfortable with.
Very good. Questions on the amendment? With that, all in favor of adopting the A17-0165 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. The amendment is adopted. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Appreciate the opportunity to come before you today. This bill is really just as a rural liver myself and having aunts and uncles living across the countryside and just dealing with the issues from the federal level of some areas of the state losing their post offices and the uniqueness of when you mail something and when it actually gets stamped that you mailed it, there is a separation. And this bill simply allows for some of that fact of the realities on the ground where you may put your mail in the mailbox in the correct time, but it simply, the stamp does not reflect when you actually did your work. And so it just gives you a one-day window to not get a penalty on your postmark. So this bill is kind of the culmination. Senator Gazelka, last year I was on tax conference committee, and he brought it forward as an amendment, and we thought there was a chance that he might be a little busy this year, so we thought we'd do some work for that. So.
Thank you. Anyone would like to testify on the bill? Members' questions for the author? Hearing none, Representative Marquardt renews his motion that House File 1537 be laid over for possible inclusion. And that House File is laid over. Representative Swazinski, you've got another bill. House File 374, Representative Anderson moves that House File 374 be entertained by the committee and laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Swazinski, House File 374.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, appreciate the opportunity to bring House File 374 before you. Moving TIF districts is a pretty common occurrence at the state. This might be a little bit different. I have John Meyer that's representing the city of Canby to explain the uniqueness of this this bill and why we need it. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Yes, my name is John Meyer. I'm the Finance and Development Advisor to the city of Canby. They requested that I participate in this discussion today. This is a special bill because during the early 2000s, the city of Canby, much like many other places, experienced quite a boom in housing to a point that they were running out of lots. So one of the home builders approached the city in 2004 and said, here's a blighted piece of ground. If you make some improvements to it, I can build 21 homes in this area. So the city agreed and approved a tax increment district for this area to clean up and make public improvements. And in 2005, they issued some debt as well as entered into a development agreement with this home builder, issued some debt for $175,000 and made the public improvements. In 2006, the home builder started building homes. Unfortunately, in 2008, the housing market collapsed, so there was no homes being built. But the city had the debt of $175,000. And with no income coming in, the city decided in 2011 to pay off the debt and any interest that was due with tax dollars. And we're here today to try to request the creation of a special TIF district of 20 years for the same geography so they can recover their $175,000 in capital and principal debt as well as $105,000 in interest payments they made. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Anyone else who would like to testify on House File 374? Members' questions for the author or Mr. Meyer? Hearing none, Representative Anderson renews his motion that House File 374 be laid over for possible inclusion, and the House file is laid over. Thank you, Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Chair Jaskowski.
Representative Wagenius, House File 1562. Representative Carlson moves that House File 1562 be entertained by the committee and laid over for possible inclusion. Welcome, Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm one of the two legislators whose districts is part urban and part suburban. And my suburban part is the eastern side of Richfield, an inner ring suburb with a hometown feel. The bill before you is from Richfield and extends the Lindale Garden TIF district by 3 years. Lindale Garden Center went out of business during the Great Recession and was left vacant for several years. Its roof failed, and it had a huge greenhouse, and people broke the glass in the greenhouse. So the property became the very definition of a blighted property. With me today is Steve Devich. He is the Richfield City Manager, and he will briefly tell you about the TIF district that was created and the need for the extension.
Thank you. Please introduce yourself for the record, sir, and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Steve Devich, and I am the city manager of the city of Richfield. Very briefly, as Representative Wagenius indicated, this site is the site of the former Lindale Garden Center, and a site that became very blighted and into decay, really. We started trying to redevelop this basically around 2010, and what happened in 2013 is really the district got started, and we began the demolition of the Lindale Garden Center. And as was previously indicated, that building contained a lot of glass, and the site was littered with broken glass and all the other things that went with years of having a garden center on the site. The city of Richfield already put in about $650,000 to help with that cleanup. In 2014, the Lake Winds Co-op grocery store was established as part of that project. And really after that, it really has kind of stalled out. We just found out about 60 days ago that the most recent developer working on it has decided not to pursue it for a number of reasons, but one, there remains cleanup on the site. The site's very compact, even though it's, I think, a very attractive and beautiful site. It's going to require some structured parking, more cleanup. There's another building that's got to be torn down. And so all of those kinds of costs could be recaptured in that five-year knockdown period, and that's what we're asking here, to extend that for a period of another 3 years. And I think that would allow us to move forward to get some of these issues taken care of and move forward with the project.
Thank you, Mr. Devich. Anyone else would like to testify on the bill? Hearing none, questions, members, or Mr. Devich or Representative Wagenius? Hearing none, Representative Carlson moves renew his motion that House File 1562 be laid over for possible inclusion, and the House file is laid over. Representative Wagenius and Mr. Devich, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Smith, House File 732. Representative Whalen moves that House File 732 be entertained by the committee and laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Smith, welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you. House File 732 is some modifications to an existing TIF provision from a few years ago. This is the same bill that this committee heard and was in the final tax bill from last year. And I have my mayor from Maple Grove with us to discuss this a little bit further.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Sir, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Mark Stephenson, the mayor of Maple Grove. I'm pleased to be here to put forward this tax increment financing bill again this year. As the representative said, it was in last year's omnibus tax plan. It's a rather simple correction bill for a tax area increment finance area that was approved in 2014. Essentially, there are three modifications. One is so that all the project area boundaries can match up with the actual parcels. The other is an all or a portion of project area definition change so that we as a city can take appropriate action with respect to the parcels and the soil conditions that relate to those parcels. And then finally, the third amendment is to allow the city to use these funds in the project area, which at times may be outside the immediate tax increment finance district that would be established, but would be actually within the actual project area for road improvements. This relates to the soil conditions in the gravel mining area that need to be improved as a result of the mining operations. So those are the principal three amendments. They will significantly help our ability to market this area and create new jobs and bring new industries to the city and the state.
Thank you, Mr. Stephenson.
I have with me the City Administrator, Heidi Nelson.
Ms. Nelson, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair, welcome. Members of the committee, my name is Heidi Nelson. I'm the City Administrator for the City of Maple Grove.
Proceed, please. Thanks.
Chair, I don't have anything to add. I'm happy to answer any questions that the committee may have.
We like brevity. Thank you, Ms. Nelson.
You're welcome.
Anyone else who would like to testify for or against the bill? Questions, members? Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair, just a comment, because I pass by Maple Grove all the time to and from St. Paul, and I want to compliment you on how beautifully you have established what I call a new city in rural Minnesota. I know it's not new anymore, but it's a delight to see how you have developed your business area, your industrial area, as well as your residential area. It's just really a salute, I think, to fine planning.
Sounds like an endorsement of the bill. Other questions, members? Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and segue on to Representative Erickson's. This is what you can do with reclamation of an old mining area.
Other questions, members? Or comments? Thank you, Representative Smith. Anything finally, Representative Smith?
Mr. Chair, members, I appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, Representative Whalen, I think, moved this one. Representative Whalen renews her motion that House File 732 be laid over for possible inclusion, and that House file is laid over. Thank you. Okay. Representative Frankie, do you want to discuss your bill? Which one is it? XXX.
Mr. Chair, members.
Okay, Representative Frankie, before you proceed, this particular bill has, I think it's going to be introduced today.
Yes, correct, Mr. Chair.
And so we don't have the bill actually before us, members, but we want to hear the bill along with the rest of the TIF bills here today. And so we won't actually be laying this over per se, but we probably will, I'm guessing, at the next meeting we can officially lay it over so that the rest of the procedure is done correctly. Representative Frankie, please introduce your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This is House File Quadruple X, as you may see. It is dealing with the area of Newport, one of the cities within my district that has blighted property that has been blighted for years. There used to be development and business on this property, and it has since gone away. Newport has been fighting the battle ever since the Wakota Bridge project redevelopment kind of cut them off from growth. So we're hoping to help assist with the development in that area, and I will let my testifier speak to the bill.
Okay, thank you. Please introduce yourself, ma'am.
Oh, I might add, Mr. Chair and members, I did bring donuts. This is my first bill in this committee, just so you know.
Whoa.
And they are from Supermom's Bakery, which is in my district. So anytime you stop at a Supermom's or Super America, just think of St. Paul Park.
Okay, your bill's doing really good, Representative Frankie. Please
morning,
introduce
Mr.
yourself.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Melissa Taphorn. I'm the Deputy Executive Director of the Washington County Community Development Agency, or CDA. And the bill that will be before you, and we appreciate you bringing us on today, Linda, is what we consider typical use of redevelopment TIF district. And that is because we, as the public, are trying to use smaller parcels that were developed many, many years ago and are multiple uses right now and maybe underutilized, and trying to redevelop those, assembling those into larger developable parcels in today's modern development. So the bill that will be before you requests flexibility in the time limits that are set to establish districts. So the five-year rule, we're asking for an extension to be 9 years to allow us to be able to phase those and do voluntary acquisitions. So that requires extra time as we go through that process. And then the second flexibility that we're requesting through the bill is to allow 9 of the parcels in the very large district to be determined eligible for redevelop or as a redevelopment district as substandard condition test. And then I'm going to turn it over to Newport Mayor Dan Lund and Washington County Commissioner Carla Bigham to explain the background from both the city and county perspective.
Thank you, Ms. Taphorn. Mr. Lund, welcome.
Thank you, Chair and members of the council.
Please introduce yourself.
I'm Dan Lund, Newport Mayor. This is an incredibly important area for Newport. It's right off the Wakota Bridge, and it's kind of the front face of Newport for most of the people who drive by. It's also the most challenging area we have. It's next to the new transit station. I think you have a map there. And it is a relatively small area, so we're asking for a limited exception. This has been vetted by the county, and then the city also hired its own expert who agreed 100% that this special legislation is needed to foster redevelopment. And we also sought and received positive input from the school district on it. So really, it's really a collaborative effort, and all three affected parties have been part of the planning of this.
Thank you, Mayor Lund. And they grow mayors young by you.
I'm 37, but thank you.
Okay. I might have gotten in trouble there, Mayor. Representative Bigham, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to Representative Frankie. I have to say, nice touch on the Supermom's Donuts, and it's great to see a lot of familiar faces and friendly faces in the testifying room today. I'm Washington County Commissioner Carla Bigham, and just wanted to highlight a couple things that, you know, the Washington County CDA's role is to attract private development. And the CDA has begun to acquire and assemble parcels to develop sites through voluntary sales. A couple highlights of this area that have occurred recently is in 2014, Washington County opened the Newport Transit Station, which has our bus service. And this is amenity for future employees, residents, but also development. And we also broke ground on a private development of 42-unit apartment building this past fall, and that should open this summer. The one thing I would say is that the redevelopment costs, you know, whether it's relocation, demolition, grading, just installation of public utilities, has exceeded the value of the property, which is prompting this need for the TIF. And so certainly would appreciate your support on this proposal, and as the mayor said, this is a very strong collaborative effort, and again, would appreciate your support, and thank you for hearing this today, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bigham. Anyone else who would like to discuss this bill, testify on it, even though it's not technically before us yet? Questions, members, for the author or any of the testifiers? Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Frankie. Great map. Thank you. It's very helpful, especially color-coded. Just quick question on maybe one of the testifiers can go over the request for the pooling increase from 25% to 80% throughout the rest of the redevelopment site and why you believe that number works.
Ms. Taphorn.
Mr. Chair and Representative, Yukim. The reason we're requesting the increase to the pooling provision is because we expect that there are certain districts within the project area that may be able to have more increment and be able to, you know, that we'll use the increment to reimburse the CDA for the redevelopment expenses that Mr. Bigham spoke of. And if we had extra, we would be able to use that in a district that would not be able to reimburse the CDA's expenses, that if more expenses were expended, then increment would be earned. And because I think traditionally you're looking at this with a private developer, and you know going in what that development's going to be. When we look at different parcels and how those might be assembled in a TIF district, they may not produce as much increment as needed to reimburse those.
Thank you.
Representative Joaquin, you're good?
Thank
you. Other questions, members? Okay. Well, thank you all. We will, Representative Frankie, put this one into our list officially when we get the bill before us.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members, for hearing the phantom TIF bill.
Thank you, and then thanks for the good donuts. Representative Peterson, House File 1064. Representative Lee moves House File 1064 be entertained by the committee and laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Peterson, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for taking the time to listen to House File 1064. This legislation is to help aid economic development in a difficult area of the city of Burnsville called the Minnesota River Quadrant. This special legislation was passed in 2008. Then, almost immediately, the recession hit, as I'm sure you all recall, resulting in delays in development in Burnsville and many other cities throughout the state. I will walk through the provisions that are in the bill. First, this legislation requests changes to develop smaller parcels along Highway 13 by adding Economic Development District as a type of TIF district, which is page 1, line 10. Extend the time for qualified activity on parcels from 4 to 9 years, and this will allow more time to continue addressing much-needed soil remediation on impacted parcels, which is page 2, line 30. It will provide the city the ability to delay receipt of tax increment up to 8 years after creation of the district, giving the city more time for development to occur before the first increment is collected. There hasn't been much increment collected to date. We expect the amounts to be minimal in 2017, and as such would request the author's amendment change to 2016 to 2017 on page 3, line 5, to avoid starting the clock with small increment amounts. And that's on page 3, line 5, as I mentioned before. Do we want to maybe make that adjustment now, or do you want to... Well, I guess consider it as we lay it over. And the last provision is to extend the deadline for establishing TIF districts from 2018 to 2023, giving more time to accommodate the redevelopment needs. So far, only one district has been established, and it's TIF number 7. So I have Joel Carlson here, who also can provide some testimony from Mayor Kautz. And the letters that have been distributed to you are from the County of Dakota and are of support of this project.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. Mr. Carlson, welcome.
Mr. Chairman and members, very briefly, Joel Carlson. I represent the city of Burnsville, and on behalf of the mayor and the city council, we appreciate you taking your time to hear this proposal. We had coordinated with staff to maybe be at your evening meeting and to have the mayor here, but you guys are going pretty quick this morning. So I'm a poor replacement for the mayor, but I'm doing the best I can. Happy to answer any questions. This is an important project for the city. It's a very difficult area to redevelop, and we would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Representative Peterson, there's a one adjustment needs to happen to the bill. We need to amend 2016 to 2017. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Is there a motion to do that? Representative Erickson moves. Representative Erickson moves that 2016 on House File, on line 3.5 be amended from 2016 and amended to 2017. Any discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, all in favor of Representative Erickson's amendment to change 2016 to 2017 as it appears on line 3.5, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion passes. The amendment is adopted. Anyone else would like to testify for or against the bill? Questions, members? Hearing none, Representative Lean renews his motion that House File 1064 be laid over for possible inclusion. House File is laid over. Thank you, Representative. And
thank you, Mr. Chair. Members.
Laid over as amended, I should announce. Okay, we're going to go, members, next with House File 1584. And I understand Representative Quam is on his way. There he is. He appeared lightning quick.
Thank you,
Representative Loeffler moves that House File 1584 be entertained by the committee and then laid over for possible inclusion. Welcome, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, members, and just like modern business, just-in-time delivery. Basically, this bill is to take care of a situation in Rochester. Rochester's an economic engine for that region of the state and the state as a whole. It has the largest private employer. It has been for decades striving to improve and be an entrepreneurial, basically bringing up new ideas, new companies, and promoting the growth and continued growth. Whether the economy in the state is slow or fast, it's been a steady engine. And one of the things that it's sort of known for is the Rochester and that area, its residents generate patents more than most countries. With Mayo and IBM, it's been an innovator and a driver. And because it's got many things going on to try and maintain that, they are asking for the flexibility as complex interactions happen between the DMC and that and the normal business of TIF, for this to allow them the accounting flexibility to continue to be that driver that helps the state as a whole with job growth and actually revenue for the state.
Okay, thank you, Representative Quam. Anyone else who would like to testify for or against the bill? Representative Quam, you have...
Mr. Chair, I do have some people from Rochester, but I'm not sure of your schedule and time. So if there are any questions for them specifically, they can testify. Or, if you're brief on time...
Okay, let's see what we have for questions. I mean, they're welcome to testify if they want. Otherwise, I understand they're on standby for questions. Members, any questions for the author or anyone else? Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe this is a question for our staff, in that I understand this is kind of a unique situation because part of the building was done one way and part another way. But I'm wondering whether or not this is a significant precedent for us in terms of making this kind of exception. The other ones that we've been hearing today are ones that are kind of standard that have been coming through the years. And so I'm just wondering if this is setting a precedent that we should just highlight as we consider it.
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, to my recollection, this is the first instance where there's been a special law request for an exemption from this particular rule. On the other hand, so that, yes, this is, if you were to approve this bill, this is the first time that I can recall it's been done, and I'm pretty sure it's the first time. But this is a somewhat unique circumstance. I mean, it's not common where cities actually use tax increment to buy a building, or in this case part of a building, that they're in turn then leasing out to businesses. Usually what happens is a developer is the owner of the building and the developer simply gets reimbursed. And what the tax increment law says is if you acquire property with tax increment and then dispose of that property, sell it, for example, or lease it, which is the circumstance here, then the proceeds that you get from doing that are treated just like the tax increments were that actually acquired the property. So to prevent the circumstance where a city would, say, buy a piece of property, turn around a few years later and sell it, and suddenly be able to be free of the restrictions that apply to those tax increments. I think the city's point here is that the law is very succinct in saying that that's the rule that applies, but doesn't tell them what kind of expenses they can, you know, what are the proceeds in the case of a lease? Is that the net amount? Is, you know, so there are lots of complexities that sort of have never really been resolved because of this being a fairly unusual or unique situation. And I think they're coming forward and just saying, hey, don't apply those rules to this one instance because of that complexity. So you'll have to use your judgment about what kind of precedent that sets for the future.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Michael, for that explanation. I'm not saying that it isn't, this is a unique situation, but I thought we should know if we're starting a new line of a potential request.
Thank you. Other questions, members? Okay, hearing none, Representative Loeffler renews her motion that House File 1584 be laid over for possible inclusion, and the bill is laid over. Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Joaquin. Representative Joaquin moves that House File 973 be entertained by the committee and laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. I have a bill up, House File 973, having to do with the TIP district in St. Louis Park. This is a Elmwood TIP district that was created in 2004. It was extended in 2009. It enabled environmental cleanup and redevelopment of 22 acres of blighted property. The work on this property began in 2007 and needed the 2009 extension language to generate more tax increment to pay a larger share of the project. And it has been a large project. There's been three developments that have enabled 22 row homes, 78 townhomes, 126 condos, 509 apartments, and 35,000 square feet of commercial space. A large portion of the living space has been dedicated to seniors. And when the special legislation was approved in 2009, it did not make it clear that the city and the EDA had the authority to use any tax increment from the district to fund expenses incurred for infrastructure beyond the original TIF district's term limit, while the original TIF district did. So this is simply requesting clarification in language that was to expressly state that the city and the EDA can utilize all the tax increment from the Elmwood TIF district for infrastructure serving that area. That's kind of a quick overview, but I'm going to turn it over to my testifiers for more details and to answer any questions. Today I have with me Greg Hunt from the City of St. Louis Park, their EDA director, and then Martha Ingram, legal counsel for the City of St. Louis Park from Kennedy and Graven.
Thank you. Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Greg Hunt. I'm the economic development coordinator for the City of St. Louis Park. And as the representative indicated, with me this morning is Martha Ingram, legal counsel to the city's EDA. Thank you for considering House File 973 today, and thank you to Representative Joaquin for bringing it forward. In 2009, special legislation was passed in consideration of the economic downturn, which extended the term of the Elmwood TIF District 7 years to help fund contamination cleanup and redevelopment efforts, as well as infrastructure improvements in the district, such as the construction of the Highway 7 and Wooddale Interchange and Wooddale Street improvements. With this current bill, the city is simply seeking a clarification to the 2009 legislation to expressly state that the city and the EDA may utilize all tax increment generated over the district's last 7 years for the purpose of financing public infrastructure within the district, even though the district has passed the term limit imposed by the five-year rule. Tax increment from the Elmwood TIF District is needed to fund the remaining costs of the Highway 7 and Wooddale Interchange and to defray costs of widening the Wooddale Avenue Bridge and related Wooddale Avenue street improvements in order to make the roadway operate more safely and efficiently for vehicles, bicyclists, and pedestrians. Without these improvements, traffic studies indicate that the interchange will experience decreased operational capacity and increased congestion and traffic incidents. These improvements are consistent with the original TIF, with the original Elmwood TIF plan. St. Louis Park greatly appreciates the extension of the Elmwood TIF district in 2009 and now respectfully requests clarifying language to allow the continued use of all tax increment generated by the extended term of the district to finance infrastructure within the district as originally intended. And so we thank you for your consideration, and we would appreciate your support this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hunt. Ms. Ingram, please introduce yourself.
Good morning. Martha Ingram with Kennedy & Graven. I am the legal counsel for the St. Louis Park EDA. And I have no additional comments, but I'm very happy to stand for questions.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to testify for or against the bill? Members, questions for the author or the testifiers? Okay. Hearing none, Representative Joachim, I think you pretty well covered the waterfront.
Yes. I just want to say that TIF is a valuable tool for cities that are almost fully developed and need another tool in the toolbox. And I know that St. Louis Park appreciated the extension to this district in 2009, and they're just looking for clarifying language. I hope you'll consider it for the omnibus bill.
That old toolbox came out again. I heard that one. So, with that, House File, Representative Joachim renews her motion. House File 973 be laid over, and the bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you. Representative Whalen, would you like to hear your bill? Representative Whalen moves that House File 999 be entertained by the committee and then laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I do have a couple of folks from the City of Anoka here with me today. So I will just make some brief introductory comments and hand it over to them. The bill before you was included in the tax bill from last year, and I do have an amendment, the A1. It's just a simple technical fix. I'd like to move that, Mr. Chair.
Representative Whalen moves the A1 amendment. Very technical fix. Members, discussion on A1. Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. A1 is adopted. Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill simply goes back to 2012 and would change the effective date by 2 days, which would allow the City of Anoka to extend a TIF district from 5 to 8 years. And I have Brenda Smith and Laurie Yeager here from the City of Anoka to just give a little bit of more explanation.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Smith.
Yeager.
Ms. Yeager.
Yep.
I had a 50% chance there.
Yeah.
Welcome. Please introduce yourself, Ms.
Thank
Yeager.
Thank you. My name is Laurie Yeager. I'm the finance director for the City of Anoka. And good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm here with Brenda Smith to just talk a little bit about the Greens of Anoka TIF district up in Anoka. We are in the process of building a Greenhaven Parkway through our district that will run from Thurston Avenue all the way over to Main Street. It's going to be our workaround for the Highway 10 project that you may have seen a little bit about yet, and I'm not sure, but it will be kind of a frontage road or a backage road, if you want to call it. It's a parkway through our city during that construction progress. And unfortunately, this district, if we do not get this date changed, expires, or is the five-year rule is up in June 30th of 2017, and so we would be unable to complete the parkway without extension of this district. And so we're looking to you to just change the date by 3 days, giving us the eight-year rule rather than the five-year rule, so we can complete the phase two of the Greenhaven Parkway and redevelop this entire district.
Thank you, Ms. Yeager. Is it Ms. Smith?
Yeah.
Would you like to testify to? Ms. Smith.
Hi, Mr. Chair.
Welcome.
I just am here supporting Laurie.
Ms. Smith, just introduce yourself.
Brenda Smith. I'm the Assistant Finance Director for the City of Anoka.
Thank you.
And I'm just here to ask for you to change the date, because this will dramatically help us complete the project that we've started and would help with the whole entire Highway 10 project. So your consideration is appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to testify on the bill? Hearing none, members question for either of the testifiers or the author? Thank you for coming down today. Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair, another comment, because another one of my routes home is Highway 10. So I travel through Anoka, and I know where this is, and it will be a great benefit to their area to have this completed.
That's two endorsements today, Representative Mayor.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other discussion, members? Hearing none, Representative Whalen moves that renews her motion that House File 999 be laid over for possible inclusion, and the bill is laid over.
Thank you.
Thank you all. The bill as amended is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Vice Chair Hertas. We are looking for Representative Hansen, and I have a bill, too. I don't know if I've got – is Mr. Anderson here? I've got a testifier on my bill.
There he is.
Okay. We can do my bill, Representative Hertas.
Representative Draskowski moves House File 957 for possible inclusion.
To your bill.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, the content, we do have, and some of us have been looking at and discussing, I guess what I would characterize as creative financing methods or revenue-raising methods that some of our cities are doing. And this is one of them, and this was brought to me by my testifier, Mr. Anderson, who will talk here in a moment. But in this case, we have evidence that there's at least one city in Minnesota and probably more that are using the mere existence of zoning, of the fact that they have zoning in their controls to extract a fee from people in their community without actually having any need to pay for anything or any services delivered to those people. So with that, Mr. Chair, this is the bill. I don't know if it's worded completely right yet, but we'll have that discussion. But with me is Mr. Anderson, and I think that'll help the discussion.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Anderson. If you would state your name and your association for the record, please.
Yep, Mr. Chair and members, my name is Dave Anderson. I'm a resident of Lonsdale, Minnesota. And I brought this bill to Representative Draskowski and Representative Vogel, or the idea for the bill prior to session. One of the things, when I heard Representative Draskowski was looking for ideas of where locals were imposing some considered a tax were not needed, this was one of the ideas that I actually sent to Representative Draskowski, I think, last summer. So what happened here is that this didn't directly impact me, but I brought it forward anyways, because I'm sure it's impacting some homeowners in cities that this is actually occurring. So under the state building code, a shed that's 200 square feet or less doesn't require a building permit to build. In most of your backyards, most of your communities, you can go put it, as long as you comply with the setback requirements that you put it in your backyard and all the other zoning requirements, there's no fee. In my community, there's a fee. So my neighbor approached us, didn't need to, ask if they could put their shed along our property line. Not a problem. It was 5 foot off. It was off the utility easement. It was nowhere negatively impacting any of the regulations that were in the zoning code for this permitted use. They built it. One day, the building inspector walked in and said, you need apply for a fee. And my neighbor said, what fee do we have? It doesn't need a building permit. So, well, Lonsdale requires one, and you must pay it. So the building's already been built. Everything looks great. Setbacks, everything else is in compliant with the Lonsdale city zoning, but they still have to pay a fee. Fee for what? I don't know what. But so my neighbor contacts me. I live right next door. We're talking outside. She told me about the fee. I'm like, well, that's kind of ridiculous. I mean, I'm the one that kind of told them they didn't need a fee building permit to begin with. In Minnesota, we went from 125 square feet to 200 square feet. So basically anything underneath that, as long as you're in compliance with your zoning code, in most communities, you don't need to pay a fee, a building permit fee. So I told them, don't worry about it. So, but then after being harassed by the city four or five times to pay the fee, they paid the fee. As a result, they paid the fee, but nothing happened. There was no inspection. There was nothing to review. Everything was already done. So they basically paid a fee, which is a tax on top of them building a building in the backyard. So that's what this bill kind of is designed to do, is to stop cities from imposing fees where there's no reason to impose a fee. If you're imposing a fee when it's not necessary and the city takes no action, all it is a tax on an individual resident on what they did. So that's what this language was drafted to prohibit, not for my benefit, not even for my neighbor's benefit who has already paid this tax, but for those in communities that impose a fee where one really shouldn't be imposed to begin with. I like to say most of the cities that I reviewed, Hopkins, Shakopee, Woodbury, Champlin, already put it on their website that something like this, it's a small building, less than 200 square feet, that the building code already allows no permit for. Simply say as long as you comply with all the zoning requirements, there's no fee at all in our city. I'm only looking to make sure that those cities that are looking as a revenue generator, instead of common sense, we stop those cities from imposing fees, which, in my opinion, are a tax on our residents in Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Any questions from members for Mr. Anderson? Representative Marquardt has a question.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Mr. Anderson, while there wasn't a permit required, there were setbacks required. And do you know if the city ever came out and looked to see if proper setbacks were there? Granted, the square footage didn't require a permit, but did they come out and look to see if the setback was proper?
Mr. Chair, members, as far as I know, Mr. Marquardt, Representative Marquardt, the only time that the building inspector was there was the time when he came out to demand that the applicant actually pay the fee. No other time was the building inspector or anybody else from the city come back to the property. Okay. But the homeowner themselves looked at the setbacks prior to that and knew what the setbacks were. And even though that they didn't go into the utility easement or setback adjacent to our property, they asked for permission from the homeowner if the easement could go down that side of the property line, which we had no problem with.
Representative Mark.
Chair, yeah, I mean, if the city really doesn't have to do anything, then there really isn't an extra service. But they still, and I don't know what the ordinance would say, they still might have to come out and look at setbacks and so forth, which would require an on-site inspection of some sort, which, you know, is some activity being taken by the city. And so I'm just wondering, I know what you're trying to get at, Mr. Chair, and I'm wondering if it's not a bit broad to review or investigate. I mean, I think I know what you're trying to get towards, and I don't know if we're quite there with this, but it might be a step in the right direction. So thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Oh. Representative Carlson. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My concern is with the use of the term permitted use. A single-family home on a piece of property zoned R1 is going to allow for a single-family home. So, again, I understand the intent. Perhaps a better word choice would be accessory use, such as a shed, a fence. But, I mean, clearly there's a review and permitting process for a single-family home to be built, which may not require, which may be a permitted use per its zoning. So I don't know if the language as stated with the adding of that one sentence and the use of the word permitted use achieves what it is you're after based on your example. So I just caution that word choice, and perhaps there's a different way of which in getting at perhaps accessory. Accessory uses are usually delineated within a zoning code to get to the specific types of structures which, to your point, do not require any type of permit. So I guess perhaps just a closer look at that might better achieve what it is you're pursuing here.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. We want to get this language to something that works, but we also want to send a message to cities and members. I think there's a bunch of these. We have had discussion with staff and others about what we see going on in Minnesota. I think we've read about these creative revenue generation approaches that some cities in our state are using. This is simply one. And as I look at them, I wonder, are we going to engage in whack-a-mole here where we whack one and one pops up somewhere else, or what. But we have revenue generation going on where it's not authorized in law, and this is an example of that. And I want to get the language right on this, so I appreciate Representative Marquardt and Representative Carlson, your thoughts and ideas there as we go forward. I don't know, does Mr. Carlson want to speak on the bill from?
Representative Joaquin has a question first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I have an idea that might tighten it up, but just for you to think about as we lay it over or whatever you want to do with it. Adding language, something that says that doesn't involve an inspection or overview other than collecting a fee. So, I mean, just to make sure that there's no permitted use that we're not thinking about right now that could cause work for the city. Just a way to think about for tightening it up for you.
Any other questions for Mr. Anderson or the chair? We have
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Yes.
Yeah, I think and Representative Joaquim, I mean, if we can maybe brainstorm afterwards too, in the days ahead, but. I just want to find what works here. But, you know, and Representative Marquardt, I don't know. I mean, so the setback thing, for those of you that have worked with cities in this, it's a question, I guess. I mean, isn't a setback something that normally is assumed that the landowner is going to adhere to, and it's only something that when there's a complaint that comes forward that there would requires the city to interact with it, isn't the default that it's understood that it's up to the landowner to adhere to the setbacks, but when there's a complaint is when there's actually services or cost accrued by the city? Isn't that the case?
Mr. Chair,
maybe you can answer the question. It's a question too, Mr.
Yeah.
Chair.
Well, thank you, Chair Daskowski. In many planted areas in particular, there are drainage and utility easements that usually encumber the property. And so it's usually pretty well understood not to impair those utility easements and or drainage easements. So normally, like with an accessory building, there would be information available that you have to meet these setback requirements and that you don't put a structure that would impair the drainage or utility easement as well as any underground utilities that might be there. So there have been circumstances, and usually these accessory buildings are movable in nature. They're not considered to be permanent structures, so they could be moved, but in the process of placing them, generally there needs to be some adherence to that, and doesn't mean that because you own the property that you impair those easements.
I think Representative Nelson had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr.
Representative
Mr.
Nelson.
And Mr. Chair, actually to the question he asked, I know in situations a lot of people don't know where their property lines are or aren't clear. I know in my house where it backs up to a side yard of another property, we measured it. With my kids were in Scouts, I got a copy of the plat and we measured it, and it surprised my neighbor where the property line really was. They thought they were 5 feet over than they were. And I know of other situations where people have built buildings. I know somebody I know many years ago went to buy a house, and when they went to get a mortgage, the previous owner had built a garage, and it was actually on railroad property, and that was the issue. So, I mean, so sometimes people don't know where their property lines are. They're not staked out. And when properties are sold, they're not marked and moved wherever told where those stakes are. So, I mean, I can see where it could possibly have to come out and check the setbacks, but the property owner should know that. And I agree with this bill and support this bill. I mean, it sounds like the only service that they were charging a fee was for coming out and collecting the fee. A fee to collect the fee is what this looks like to me. So I think, and other than there are situations where people don't know exactly where the property lines are, and especially after developments that have been around a while and have been sold multiple times, houses that, you know, you may not be sure exactly where they are.
Mr. Anderson, if you would remain, Mr. Carlson, would you like to come down from the League of Minnesota Cities as a comment? Welcome to the committee. If you'd state your name and who you represent for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. I'd like to just respectfully oppose this legislation as overly broad. You're dealing with an area that you typically don't deal with in this committee as much, Chapter 462, the Planning Act. And so I just want to give you a brief background. Under state law, we do have the ability to impose fees to recover costs. And the requirements in state law under 462 are that they must be fair, reasonable, and proportionate to the cost of the service provided. I don't know all the facts behind this specific situation, so I don't want to speak to the specifics. But keep in mind that permitted uses, I think Representative Carlson highlighted this, there are fees that we do need to collect for inspections of various facilities, even on a permitted use. And another example might be not only just a house, construction of a house, but last year the legislature passed we informally call it the granny pod legislation, and if a city didn't opt out, under state law that was a permitted use, and yet the city was still required to inspect for making sure that the facility is properly anchored and so forth. So I would like to work with Representative Druskowski to tighten down the language. Certainly we think that it is overly broad and would prevent cities in many cases from collecting fees to recover costs for zoning, land use planning, and building code enforcement. Mr. Chair, with that, I would stand for any questions.
Okay, thank you. Members, any questions of Mr. Carlson? And members, I would just comment in this arena or area, there are even representatives at the table that represent certain communities. In my own experience with building and construction, not only do you have to submit a registered survey of your proposed building plan, and then the inspector comes out and inspects that the staking and the excavation and the footings meet the setback and that the proposed project is conforming with that, then above and beyond that, after the house is framed, then one community requires you to provide an as-built survey. So they're not imposing a fee, but they're requiring you to provide another survey, which costs the owner another $350 to $450 to send the surveyors out again and to record everything precisely to the tenth of a foot, that everything is conforming. So it's kind of a duplicity, if you will, and onerous in that regard of having two sets of documents in the city file, both the proposed and the as-built. Any other questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for clarification, Chair Druskowski, is this only applying to structures under 200 square feet? I know that was mentioned by, I think, your testifier putting up a small shed. I'm just wondering if this would apply to, like, building permits on a garage-type structure.
Chair Druskowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, no. That was the example that he used from the particular community that he was looking at, what their rules were. But we're just attempting to limit these fees to situations where there's actually a service that's provided by the municipality.
Representative Anderson.
Well, back home in my area, my neighbor's garage burnt down, and he rebuilt on the exact same footprint, so there was no question about zoning or setbacks. It's in the country. But the county came out, he was in process of building, and said, we're going to stop you unless you pay a $100 building permit fee. And I don't think they really did anything, just had that sheet of paper hanging on a tree saying he had a building permit. So is that kind of things you're trying to get at here as well, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson. I suspect that that individual actually required a permit, so there was actually legitimacy, the way it sounds, in your situation. In the situation that Mr. Anderson described, and as I understand there's others, they are not actually, the city's not providing a permit, they're not providing an inspection service, they're not providing anything, they're simply taking money because in this case there just happened to be something around zoning and that they could hang it on. So Mr. Carlson has offered to help me on the language. I understood when I came with this bill it might not be perfect, but hopefully we can whack this mole.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carlson, has the League of Minnesota Cities
and this, I think, applied for the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, too, ever prepared a catalog of what is applicable in every city in regard to a fee for service? So is there a listing, for example, so that we can all go to a website and see, for example, what our city lists? Does the league collect that and keep track of that? Because I know I send many persons to your office to get answers. But is that available?
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, we don't actively compile the information, but we do help individuals find information. Usually cities have a lot of information on their websites about various fees, and they're tailored to the specific communities, so we do try to foster or assist people finding the information, but we don't actively compile. Much of that information could change from year to year, from month to month, and so we don't have the ability to collect and retain that information.
Mr. Chair, I was just looking for an efficient way to track all of this so I could help Representative Druskowski.
Thank you. Any other questions from members? Anybody from the audience that would like to testify about House File 957? Seeing none, closing comments from Chair Druskowski.
Just thank you for entertaining this bill today and for the discussion. And members, and Representative Erickson, I don't know what the answers are either. I think we need to, within our realm as a committee, as we look at local government finance around the state, and if we have municipalities that are creating these creative financing schemes to extract more money from taxpayers to fund their government outside of what they're authorized in law to do, we need to figure it out. And I know there's some other areas, too. I didn't bring any of those forward today, but let's continue the discussion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with that, Chair Druskowski renews his motion to lay over House File 957 for possible inclusion. Next, we have Representative Hansen. And members here too, we have another bill that doesn't have a House file number yet, is introduced, so it'll be kind of informational to your proposed bill, Mr. Hansen, or Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you for squeezing me in. I do have the mayor of South St. Paul and staff somewhere en route between South St. Paul and here, but I'll try to.
You've got 7 minutes to get here.
I think I can cover it. This bill, which is being introduced today, is a technical correction. In South St. Paul, the Housing and Redevelopment Authority was a separate entity, and when the TIF district was created in, I think, 2002, there were different people, and there was a law change that occurred, and essentially what happened is there was not a resolution by the city. There wasn't that formal action taken. So this proposed bill is to allow that technical correction for the city now, who has taken on that HRA responsibility, to take the formal action with that certification with TIF so that they can move forward.
Any questions from members? Anybody from the audience like to test it?
It's an awesome bill, Mr. Chair.
We have a question from Representative Frankie for an awesome bill.
It was more of a comment. I am in support of all phantom bills.
And, Mr. Chair, the treats that Representative Frankie brought in also apply for this.
So we have two awesome bills today. Well, with that, we'll hopefully have a chance, now that we've heard it, to include it in a future meeting for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other business? Chair Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, just to let you know, we have some additional TIF bills that have been introduced, but they happen to be bills that were included in House File 848 in 2015. So they're, as I understand, the language is the exact language, except the date has been updated to, this year instead of 2015. And those, I'll just rattle them off. We're planning to not hear them unless a member really wants to hear them, and then include them potentially in the division report. And those are House Files 391, which deals with Coon Rapids, 530, Wyzetta, 619, it looks like Representative Juergens' bill, and 709, Richfield, 781, Dyna, 1637, and that's the Ford plant, I think, downtown St. Paul. 1988, the Seaway Port, oh, that's Duluth. Okay, thank you. And then 1170, which is Representative Anderson's bill. And so just for information here today, those are there. If any member really wants to hear them or want to bring them before the committee, the chairs certainly would entertain that, and we could do that. So did we miss any? Okay. Okay. So that's all I had for announcement, Mr.
Well, Representative Marquardt said he would stay after hours and review them himself.
I'll waive that.
He's going to take them to Dilworth and look them over thoroughly. All right. With that, members, this meeting is adjourned.